Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I am here with...
Craig Wallace.
Who plays?
Ebenezer Scrooge.
And?
Stephen Schmidt.
Who plays?
The Clock Vendor.
Awesome. And we're here, obviously, since he said Scrooge, talking a Christmas Carol, annual tradition at lovely historic Ford's Theater now through December 31st. Thanks so much for coming in, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Wonderful to be here.
Now, for you, Craig, this is your second time in as Scrooge, right? Is this your second year playing?
This is my second year.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I know Ed Giro had played him before you. You took it over last year. So last year we talked mostly about, you know, it was your first time in the role. But now that you've had a year under your belt and this is year two, is it a little easier?
I won't say easier, but it's so much more fun. I was nervous last year because I was sort of thrown in with the cooperation of everybody, the cast and crew. And now it's mine. So now I'm enjoying it more, and it's so much more fun, and we're really having a good time.
Absolutely, great time.
The stress and the newness of it is gone, and now you can just, now I know what I'm doing. Now you can just enjoy it a little more.
And find more stuff in it. Get a little more grounded, I can make the character a little richer, which is great.
Awesome. And you, sir, I know you said you're the clockmaker. Now, I'm pretty sure I was reading in a press release or online or something that it's that the three ghosts in this telling of it have sort of, I guess, real-world counterparts, like Wizard of Oz in a way.
Yes, exactly. Kind of the gimmick with this particular adaptation is that the three ghosts are played by street vendors who Mr. Scrooge goes out and duns for money that they owe him on Christmas Eve. So we sort of come back and help Mr. Scrooge to discover the true path of Christmas.
So does that sort of almost play into the message of you never know who's watching? You know, even the lowliest person on the street could wind up being the ghost or an angel or whatever your analogy is. But does that kind of play into that theme?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, really, it does. It's it's about... when Mr. Dickens wrote this in 1843, it was about thinking about other people in your city, on your planet, that are just as important as you are. Maybe they're poor, maybe they're this or that, but they are equal, and they should be seen by everybody as that. And I think that's kind of one of the main points, and I think that this adaptation helps point that up a little bit.
Absolutely. So instead of the, you know, are there no prisons, are there no workhouses, or maybe they should die and decrease the surplus population. No, they're one of us. We're all together.
Exactly.
Remind us, I mean, it's hard to believe anyone that wouldn't know this tale, but just for radio purposes, give them the story, the premise for anyone who's, everyone knows this.
The premise is it starts out on Christmas Eve, and Mr. Scrooge is in his counting house with his poor Mr. Cratchit, who works for him, and is very poorly treated by Mr. Scrooge. And his nephew comes in, tries to wish him a Merry Christmas. He doesn't have none of it. He says his... a humbug, and then some solicitors come in, they're collecting money for the poor, wouldn't you like to contribute, and Mr. Scrooge sends him on his way, and then he goes home, and after dunning these three people for, you know, the debts that he's owed, and he picks up something from everybody, he gets a doll, a puppet really, from one of them, gets a bottle of cider from another, and he takes my clock away.
Oh, so there's like a prop, a familiar image that goes through.
Exactly, and they go up on his mantle. And then, lo and behold, his former partner, who's been dead for 7 years, Mr. Marley, shows up, and the hijinks commence.
Awesome. And they show him his past, present, and future, as we all know. Who plays Marley in this?
James Konacek.
Okay. Tell me about what's great about working with James Konacek.
Well, I've known James for many, many years, so we've done several plays together, and it's always fun to work with people that you've worked with before, as Stephen and I have worked together.
Absolutely.
Several times. So it's always great to be able to be in a story with actors that you know and trust.
Yeah,
we can take risks, we can take chances, and we know that we have each other's back.
Now, I've seen it several, you know, it's an annual tradition. We keep coming back, but maybe for people that haven't been, without entirely spoiling it, but explain that sensory experience of when Marley shows up, because it's sort of a visual, audio experience on the senses.
It's interesting because I don't think Scrooge believes in any sort of supernatural or any sort of ghosts or anything like that. So when Marley arrives, it's truly terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if somebody had said to him, a ghost is going to visit you, he'd say, that's nonsense. Bah, humbug.
Yeah.
So when it actually happens, He's terrified. Yeah. And I don't think Scrooge has been terrified since he was a child.
Yeah.
I think that part of his armor, because he was a lonely child.
Yeah, what terrified him as a child?
Being alone, not having any friends. You know, he didn't have a great relationship with his father. His sister, Fan, who he loved very much, he didn't get to see often, but when he saw her, he loved her. I think he was terrified of being alone.
Mm. And even Fan's death, and that he resents the nephew, Fred.
He's built up a wall around himself so that he doesn't have to feel. Mm. And the arrival of Marley really shakes his foundation. And Marley gets him to believe, at least gets him to go on this journey.
Yeah.
Because the spirits actually do show up. One is flying.
Yeah.
You know, one is bigger than life.
Yeah.
And then another one is also very scary.
Silent and mysterious.
Silent and mysterious. And it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Well, so he has to deal with it.
Scrooge is the embodiment throughout all of time in literature and movies and everything. He is the embodiment of the material world. And for that to suddenly be shown this other, more transcendent supernatural, that's probably what rocks him.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
How does the evolution happen that starts to thaw him? Because at first he's still pretty skeptical, right? But when are there certain moments where that you know, Craig, in the performance where you start doing a mental shift?
It begins in Christmas Past when he sees his past, when Fan comes to bring him home when he's all alone at the boarding school, when he sees Fezziwig. He has very warm feelings toward Fezziwig, something I don't think he's remembered. Right. Forever.
Until now. He's like, that guy.
When he breaks up with Belle.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing.
I hope you're happy with the life you've chosen.
Yes.
Man.
Yes.
That rocks him.
Yes. And I think that while he isn't completely won over there, he's starting now to open up and starting to, he's allowing things from his past to affect him. Things that he hasn't allowed to affect him for many, many years.
So those are sort of the cracks in the armor that you're talking about.
And then in Christmas Present, we see the Cratchits, who don't have two nickels to put together, but they're happy to be together.
Right.
He sees that. He hasn't ever experienced that. He sees people walking in the street. There's a great line. He says, "It's a cold, gloomy day. Why is everyone so full of humor?" That's a real question.
Yeah.
It seems like a stupid question, but he's literally like, why, what is there to be happy about?
Yeah.
And Present helps him to see that. Once again, he's not won over.
Right.
Quite frankly, he's not completely won over until the end. He sees where he's going to end up.
Right.
If he doesn't change his ways.
Right. And as for your role, so the clockmaker becomes which ghost?
The future.
Future, okay. Future, right? Oh, so you get to be Mr. Mysterious, cloak, almost Grim Reaper-ish.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's that's the genius of Dickens, is that he starts out with the past, and he talks about the past, and everybody's got memories of Christmas holidays, good and bad.
What's the gift associated with that one? The prop?
The clock. He takes my new steam-driven clock. And the time, and it's interesting because it's time, and that's really what we go through, the past, the present, and the future. And I think that's what ultimately gets Scrooge's attention, and he has the epiphany of, this does not have to be the way this is going, that I've been shown how this is going to end. And the redemption in that moment is a beautiful thing. Every time we've done it, it's just, it's exquisitely beautiful.
It's pretty incredible that you're to your point, that you're the clockmaker, and yet you're the one that holds like the clock on his life, and you know, it's like the ticking clock.
The clock is ticking.
It's pretty genius.
Yes.
As you're playing him, I mean, we've seen the many film and TV versions of it's like very slow movements.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that's really great about this production is that it doesn't shy away from the scary parts. I mean, this is really a ghost story.
It's a ghost story at Christmas, you guys call it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it has some scary moments, and we have young people come, and we be prepared for that, and loud noises, and I just think it kind of is a sensual thing that they hear the sounds, and people jump, and it for a second takes them out of where they are and puts them in our world, and I think it's very powerful.
Isn't that something crazy that two of like the iconic, you know, A Christmas Carol and It's a Wonderful Life are dark as hell.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, they're very and deal with ghosts and supernatural and that kind of stuff.
Both of them take place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there's so, and I guess this passes back to you, Craig. Why do you think it's almost like we mine the depths of our soul, and if it's George Bailey going into depression or Scrooge at the, you know, the darkness of him, to then. That it almost gets us to that all is lost. That man, that upswing afterwards is just got to be so much fun to play. I mean, we've seen Alistair Sim jumping around doing it, but it's got to be one of the most joyous things for you to play. Is it really as fun as it looks?
It absolutely is. And you know, there's nothing greater, or there are few things greater than a second chance.
Mm.
And Scrooge, having gone through this entire journey, and he wakes up. Or he opens his eyes and he's in his room and his blanket has not been sold and there are his bed curtains. Wait a minute. I have a second chance. And there's something about that that's absolutely joyous. That he can use all of the things that he learned through that journey and now have a new life.
Yeah.
A new way to go forward, which is based in, this is so very important to me, especially these days. It's based in compassion. These days, it seems, depending on where you live or who your friends are, mm-hmm. we're moving toward let's get yours and keep yours. Right. And those who have not, they just have not.
Right.
And this play is so much about no, reach out,
mm-hmm.
Care for others, do something for someone else. It will serve you mm-hmm. as well as it serves them. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, Scrooge has so much to give and he holds on to it. And now, and it's not even just monetarily. I think that going through this process, he has also more to give of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And people will find, I think people in the future will find that he's a rich, intelligent man, not just money rich,
mm-hmm.
but he's a rich, intelligent man
yeah.
with great depth of feeling and somebody you'll want yeah. to be a friend.
Scrooge has not only been a miser with his money, but with himself.
With himself, and his absolutely.
Heart. And Craig does such a beautiful job with that. It's wonderful to be on the stage when he has that epiphany.
That's a genius way to put it. He's been a miser with himself. That's a really great way to look at it. So, like, I mean, but just jumping off of what you just said, we get to see Scrooge go through this journey, and it's an actual tangible thing that we see him get a second chance, and that's where the joy comes from. But for audience members who go in and obviously aren't going to be visited by ghosts tonight, although you never know, but, you know, how can they and we, all of us who are listening to this, live as if we've had that second chance already? You know, like, we see the show and we go out into the world. How is it just the compassion thing you're talking about? Or, you know what I mean? Like, how can we, in our day-to-day, the holidays and beyond, be Scrooge at the end of the movie in our own lives?
Well, you know, like all great stories, if it has touched you in the theater, it'll touch you outside of the theater as well.
Yeah.
And the feeling that you felt, it'll come back to you. When you see an opportunity, and it's not just reaching out to the homeless, which is great if you can do, or donating to your cause, which is great if you can do, but how about just going up to a friend or a colleague and saying, "Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you all right? Or hi, it's good to see you."
The little things.
It's the little things that mean so, so much.
Yeah.
So hopefully, like I said, if you're moved by the piece at all, an opportunity will present itself where you can make the choice to either stay closed or open up.
Yeah. And there is an actual way to give, isn't there? There's a bit of a charitable element every year. Explain mm-hmm. who we're helping this year.
Yeah, well, you know, we started doing this, 9 years ago, I guess, and Paul Tatro, the director of Ford's Theater, had this idea to bring in for 1 week a charity and we'll collect money for them. And we did that. And at the end of the week, all of the actors were going, "Well, why are we stopping this? This is fantastic." So over the years, we choose a charity, a local D.C.-based, generally homeless-centered charity. And Craig steps forward at the curtain call and says, you know, in the spirit of Dickens, we are supporting this charity this year. We're asking if you would like to. You have the opportunity. Some of our cast will be out collecting, and people come up, and we raise a lot of money. I'll say $80,000 a year for some of these different charities. But it's a real gift to our audience because Dickens wrote this specifically to get people to give to charity, to think about their fellow man. And we are giving them an immediate, moment to do
right
that.
Then.
You don't have to go home and go online.
Right.
You can just drop in the basket.
Yes, the charity is House of Ruth. It's a local organization that provides housing and services for homeless women and children who have survived domestic violence.
And the one thing that really gets me, Jason, is the kids who come see this. We have very young children who are brought by their parents. And
Tiny Tims.
Tiny Tims, all of them. They come up to us holding our hats for the money. They reach in their pocket and they put every penny they have.
Their allowance.
Pocket. Exactly. And it's just, that's so beautiful.
That's adorable.
It makes the whole thing worth it to see that kind of generosity, you know, inspired by our production.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to see it again, like every year. I honestly think Dickens' work here in this is one of the most astonishing achievements ever. I know it's a short story and a play and that stuff, but it is. I think it's the story itself and the characters and the themes, and man, I think it's like up with the greatest literature. I really do.
Yeah, it's rock solid.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like I said, he wrote it in 1843. Here we are, mm-hmm. filling Ford's Theater every holiday season with people who love it and respond to it. It's amazing.
There's a reason it lasts. There really is.
It endures. It's the 21st century, and we still need to tell this story.
Absolutely. Maybe now more than ever. Oh, no, it had its place at all times, really, in history. And I have a feeling 100 years from now, it'll still be told.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope.
So, yeah. Thanks so much, guys. This is great.
Thank you.